This program is sponsored by The Church of God International and supported by our viewers.
The God of Israel is not a God of confusion. No, He is a God of law and order. We need to keep in mind immediately upon freeing the Israelites from Egypt, it wasn't long thereafter that He gave them His law. And this was to ensure this tiny nation that He was indeed with them, as long as they remained with Him. However, today those nations that have adopted the God of Israel to be the basis of their religious foundation have abandoned those laws. And instead, chaos and anarchy seem to be growing within the borders of these countries. Violence and destruction resulting in so much loss of life and tragedy has occurred within many of the cities across these lands. Why do you think this is? Well, on today's program, we will explore these conditions and present some plausible reasons these circumstances have literally exploded around the world. So stay with us as we share this information with you right out of your Bible.
In times like these, we need the armor of God for the well-being of our families, to help you stand in the evil day. The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. And now your host, Tony Bukert.
Well, hello there, friends, and welcome to another international telecast of the Armor of God. Now, I'm sure you're a lot like me, but it seems like the older I get, the more I start to reminisce about the good old days. You know, those days in which you had very little to worry about, you know, in which mom and dad took care of everything. They went to work, they paid the bills, and it seems like we were just left to ourselves a lot of time to either play or go to school. It was really a wonderful existence because we didn't really worry about a whole lot. And I was sitting here thinking about my days in high school. You know, I think it's because I've come in contact with a lot of old high school friends lately, and we've been talking a lot about some of these good memories and some of the fun times and some of the things that we got ourselves into that may not be considered funny now, but a lot of things that we came out of and came through as a result of our teenage years. We sit there and we think to ourselves, and we actually say to each other, isn't it amazing that we turned out the way that we did? We never thought that we'd be like this. We never thought we would make it in life, because it was hard to see ourselves beyond our high school years, because everything was just always so immediately in the moment, and that's all that really mattered. And when I was thinking about my high school days, I had to stop and think to myself, and I don't know about you, but I was one of those guys that I didn't like high school. You know, it wasn't the sense of social activities or friends, those kind of things I love, from playing football to the school dances to the extracurricular activities to all the fun parts about high school. And I'm sure that you have your own memories. And as I'm saying this, you're going back in your mind, and maybe some events that were very important to you and endearing to you are flooding your memories right now. And that's all fine and good. But the one thing that I can remember about high school is that you would always be sitting there in the morning times or during lunch, and the bell would ring, and you'd have to slam your locker closed and run to the classroom because you spent a little bit more, too much time, I should say, than talking to your friends. Well, you should be getting ready for the class. So you do the best you could to beat feet and get into the classroom before that second bell rang and before the teacher would count you tardy, and then you would get some sort of in-school suspension or whatever they're doing now, I'm not sure. But there's always something that bothered me about school. It's like when I went into the classroom and sat down, as soon as that second bell rang, teacher would get up from his or her desk and they would shut that door, and just automatically I felt like I was enclosed and encapsulated and almost imprisoned. I just wanted to leave. I just couldn't stand that. And as a result of that, you know, I didn't fare very well as far as academia is concerned. I didn't have very good grades. I just didn't really do myself any favors in that regard. However, as I was talking to my friends, I had to think fondly of one teacher that really impacted me in high school, who kind of broke those barriers and some of those notions that I had about school. And he was really, really just a neat guy who really influenced a lot of my thoughts. He taught me a lot about debate, taught me about fallacies and logic, taught me how to hold my own when it comes to debating and things like this. And the ironic thing about this is his name was Mr. Wynn. He wasn't a debate teacher. He wasn't an English teacher. You know, typical classes that you would find yourself engaging in this type of learning. No, you know what he was? He was an ecology teacher. And if you go back to your days of school, you might remember that ecology, and this is what he taught me about, is the study of one's environment and the animals that participate or live in that environment and how they are a part of this symbiotic relationship and how this thing called nature just kind of functions on its own. And it really is kind of a wonderful thing when you see it, how it's all designed. But sometimes, you know, we don't consider beyond the physical, you know, because we talk about pollution in our environment, these kind of things. But we need to consider more the spiritual condition, the Christian ecology that we find ourselves in. But before I get into all of that, let me just say this real quick. We do, on the Armor of God, like to make available to you offerings completely free of charge. And when I say free of charge, I do mean completely free of charge. We're not going to call you and ask for money. This is made possible through the tithes and offerings and the support of our viewers on the Armor of God. We do have a CD that's entitled Indifference to Sin, and it's given by one of our ministers in the Canadian church, Mr. Murray Palmentier. But doesn't that ring true? Have you ever wondered yourself, why do we see so much sin in the world? Well, Mr. Murray Palmentier goes a long way to explain it's because there has become an indifference to sin, that we no longer know how to maintain what the definition of sin is. We've more or less, well, we've kind of gone on our own and maintained this amoral approach to things, and Mr. Murray Palmentier explains a lot of that. In addition to that, we have a booklet we'd like you to receive, and it's entitled, What is Sin? And that's the one thing that people have a hard time really defining when you kind of see all these activities going on out there in the world. It seems to be and is that people are deciding for themselves what's right and what's wrong. But have we considered what God says is sin? It's a very important question, especially if we're Christians. Now, you can simply reach out to us by dialing 888-578-8791. Again, that's 888-578-8791. Or if you'd rather and you prefer to use the web, World Wide Web, you can go to cgi.org. And perhaps maybe something I say today just kind of raises a question in your mind. Well, you can just hit us up at info@cgi.org, and someone will be more than happy to answer your questions. Now, as a matter of interest and something you might want to check into also, is we do have a weekly webcast every Saturday. Now, you want to make sure before you view the webcast that you go on to the web and find out what time it's on, because the times may vary. Okay, getting back to the topic of this study of ecology, and we've talked about the physical environment. You know, we spend a lot of money, we spend a lot of resources and time trying to protect this physical ecology that we live in, and that's not to say that it's not for a purpose. You know, who wants to live next to a chemical dump site in which the waters are polluted and you're drinking that and as a result we're getting sick? Or maybe a garbage dump. No one wants to live next to that because obviously the smell, and it's unsanitary. So it is important that we watch out for pollutants. And sometimes I think we just take it a little bit too far, because our Creator told us when he created Adam and Eve, he said, replenish the earth, fill the earth, and subdue the earth. So these natural resources that we have are for our good and for our purpose, for our living. And sometimes we go too far in trying to protect this Mother Earth. It's almost like this pantheist ideology of worshiping the earth. But be that as it may, what I really want to talk about, though, what's really important to us, is the fact that there is a spiritual world out here. It is real. It is our Christian economy, or Christian ecology that we live in, rather. And it goes a long way to, well, interrupting our lives sometimes when we see this thing called sin going on. However, Jesus, and this is why it's so important to us, why we talk about our Christian ecology and this thing called pollution and sin that we find going on around us is because Jesus gives us a wonderful promise. It's a promise that you can count on. It's something that Jesus wants to give us, made possible through his life, his living a good life, a sinless life. No one else can say that, by the way, other than Jesus, that he lived a sinless life. He obeyed his Father's laws. He never tripped up once. He's the only one in every entity that people would consider deity, even the false gods, you know, the lowercase g gods that people want to say are deities like Buddha and so on like that. You know what makes your Savior so unique from other supposed deities? He's the only one to ever make the claim that he was God. No one else can make that claim. No one else did. But Jesus died for those words. Jesus died for saying, "Before Abraham was, I am." You remember, and the priest got so mad he tore his clothes, which is a more symbolic of pronouncing the death penalty more than it was to recognize the priest had a temperament issue. It was just simply a pronunciation or pronouncement of his death. But here's the promise that Jesus wants us to obtain. It's found right in the book of John chapter 14, and he's in verses 1 and roughly verses 4. He says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go and prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may also be. And where I go, you know the way, you know." That's another thing that Jesus made the claim to. See, Buddha claimed to know the way to enlightenment. Jesus claimed to be that light, not just to know the way. So our Savior is very much a matter of fact of history, and he did exist. His life, his death, his burial, and his resurrection are all a matter of historical fact. You know, even the atheists won't argue that there's an empty tomb. They'll just debate us on the fact that of how the tomb got emptied. But be that as it may, we're talking about this thing called ecology and the pollutants in the world. And we talk about the life cycles of animals and how everything works in this perfect symbiotic relationship. You know what else the ecology has in regard to the animals? It also has predators and prey. And we need to be aware of the fact that in this ecology that we find ourselves in, there is a predator out there who has kind of pulled the wool over our eyes and to try to, you know, try to get us to believe that he doesn't exist. And it's a shame to see that there are theologians out there that want you to believe that this being called Satan, he also goes by the name of Abaddon, goes by many different names down through history and many different languages. It's a shame that theologians want you to believe that Satan, or this great predator on Christians, as he sees us as prey, they want you to believe that this creature that is real, a spiritual being, is nothing more than they say he's nothing more than a scapegoat. That we need somebody to blame for our bad habits, our bad behaviors, and therefore mankind had to invent this evil being called Satan, who is nothing more than a mere personification of our bad behaviors. I hope you don't believe that. Now, Jesus gives us a promise. He says, don't be troubled. Don't be troubled about that. There is a predator in our ecology, and he likes to spread this thing called sin and lawlessness in and around the world. And because it is so rampant, this thing called sin, the reason why it so easily influences us is because we have become indifferent to what sin is. We become indifferent to what God says or what God calls sin. And here's the great lie. The great lie that this creature called Satan, the biggest lie ever told to humanity, you know what that lie is? That he doesn't exist. That he's not real. He wants to be able to fly underneath the radar, wreak all the havoc he wants to, and just calls all this sin that he wants. That is his mode. That's what he does. That's who he is. He's never going to change. That's exactly what he does. He is the great adversary, and he is the great predator in this ecology that we find ourselves in, and that's why we're out of balance, and that's why we see all the pollution going on in the world. Why do we see, friends? Why do we have to tolerate today in today's world? Why do we have to entertain thoughts of same-sex marriages? Why do we see all the pedophilia going on? Why do we see all the rampant, and let's just call it what it is, open rape in Hollywood, the things that are going on? Well, at the same time, the people in Hollywood are trying to tell us how to live our lives. It's just disgusting, the things that we have really become callous to, and the things that we don't even recognize as sin anymore, because it's been sold, packaged, and consequently sold to us as this thing called normalcy. We have become indifferent. And part of the reason lies in this is because, you know, we have all but abandoned our Creator's definition of what sin is. And when you can get away with that definition, or do away with it rather, you know what we're left to? We're left to decide for ourselves what's right and what's wrong. And as a matter of fact, that is a direct result of this encounter that this lady named Eve had with this thing called the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Another lie he told mankind was, wait a minute, Eve. Did God really say that you will die if you eat of the tree of the fruit of knowledge and evil? Did he really say that? And she allowed herself to become duped. And the result of that was, remember, God said, now man will decide for themselves what is right and what is wrong. Now, it's a thing called amorality. Now, on the surface, when you examine this word called amorality, well, it's only natural that when you break down the word, a meaning against, and of course, morality meaning, you know, having a sense of morals, we might get the notion on the surface that we are without morals. Well, that's not really what amoralism teaches. Amoralism teaches, way back since the days of Garden of Eden, since the first fall, that we now decide for ourselves as a matter of choice what is sinful and what is not. So to us Christians, as we struggle in this ecology, it behooves us to remind ourselves what God says is sin, and to remember what the Bible defines as sin. That way we don't become indifferent to this thing called sin, and therefore we can realize the promises that Christ gave to us in John chapter 14. Now, that is a very interesting thing to contemplate, what this thing called sin is, because everybody has a different idea. When you remove God from the picture, we're left to decide on our own what sin is. But you know, the Bible does have some very succinct definitions of what sin is. It all falls under this corporate umbrella of this thing called unrighteousness. That's really what sin is. Anything that's unrighteous. But the Bible does have some very strict definitions of what this thing called sin is. And I'd really like to point your attention to the book of 1 John. 1 John chapter 3, because I think this really cuts to the heart of the issue and really gives us a very firm definition of what sin is. And I'll tell you what, we have all but forgotten it. And in the book of 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1, this is what we read, breaking into the context. We read, "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us because it did not know Him." And there's the key component. There's the vital component right there from the pages of your Bible of how we maintain this definition of sin. You can't forget God. You can't just throw out the Bible, and that is our instruction book. I guess we have to decide here as Christians, where do we draw our values from? Is it Hollywood? Is it the news media? Is it our friends? Is it our family? Is it social pressures? Is it even the laws that contradict God's laws in our society? Or are we going to let God be the defining factor and the one who defines for us what is sin. Well, I think you would agree, if you're a Christian, that God does maintain the right to define for us what sin is and how He defines it. And it's a shame that as we go down through here, you'll hear so many people out there in the world of theology that would have you believe that the law of God is done away. I've heard that time after time after time, and I don't really believe that people fully understand the implications of what they're making when they say the law has been done away, because as we read through this, you'll see that the law is very much adequate in teaching us this thing called love. So let's just continue to read. Beloved, now we are the children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when He is revealed, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. What a great promise, to be like God, to see Him as He is, if we just maintain our watch in this polluted ecology of sin. We just got to watch it. We just got to maintain the line here. And we go on down and read. And everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. Now, time out. Wait a second. I thought that old law was done away with. You know, the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, we're told that that's just made for ancient Israel, and ancient Israel was the predicate for God's Decalogue. But you know, there is plenty of evidence in the Scriptures that predates the foundation of ancient Israel and the giving of the Decalogue or the Ten Commandments to prove adequately that God has always had a very firm definition and a clear definition of what sin is, and that if His law was in fact in place long before Israel was even a nation. As a matter of fact, the promises given back to Abraham back in the book of Genesis, I believe it was chapter 26, said He gave the promises to Abraham, and we don't know how long God looked for a righteous person to give the promises to, but He said, because Abraham obeyed my laws and my statutes. That's why Abraham was chosen. So God has always had a standard. What is the definition of sin? Well, in the Greek, the word is harmateia, or harmateia. And the best way that I can describe this Greek word that means or implies sin, this harmateia, well, the definition is it means to miss the mark. Now, let's put this in modern terms of how we miss the mark. Now, some of you who may play this game, you've seen it at picnics, called cornhole. You know, you stand back and you throw the beanbag and you try to hit this hole. Now, I'm not very good at that, so you could say that when I toss that beanbag, that I'm almost always going to be missing the mark. But I'm aiming still. I'm still trying to hit the mark. Or archery, you try to hit the bullseye. You're not trying to miss, but sometimes you just fall short. And that's really what sin means. It means to be trying to miss the mark, but you miss it. You miss that mark, even though you try. And that's what sin really means. The definition of sin is transgression of God's law, and that's why we become so indifferent to it. That's why we tolerate things in our society. That's why we put up with some of the things that we do, and why we're conditioned in the United States of America to accept things, quite frankly, friends, whether you agree with this or not, that are not normal. It's not normal. It's not normal that children in preschool read books as the teacher reads them. Actually, the teacher reads in the books that Johnny has two dads and so on. Because we've become indifferent. We've forgotten it. We've adhered to this thing called tolerance. And we think it's based on compassion, but it's really not. We have to maintain, in this ecology that we find ourselves in, God as our standard for living. Otherwise, everyone's left to themselves to decide what's right and what's wrong. Now, in the book of 1 Timothy, as I begin to wind this down here a little bit, you'll see the purpose of the commandment is very valid, and not only was it significant in the Old Testament, but it's validated in the New Testament as well. Here's the purpose of the commandments. And we read this, and Paul wrote to Timothy, and he wrote in verse 5, "Now the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from a sincere faith, from which some have strayed, turning aside to idle talk." Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Some have turned aside from this. A commandment, the purpose of a commandment is love from a pure heart, and yet every Sunday and throughout the week, on TV, on webcasts, perhaps at public Bible studies, what is taught to Christians worldwide, globally? What are we taught? What are we told to believe regarding this thing called law? We've been told that it's insignificant, and it's this harsh schoolmaster, this taskmaster that weighs us down, and the law is not valid because it's just there to beat us over the heads. Well, the Apostle Paul, he said he would not have known what sin is if the law wouldn't have said, you shouldn't steal. So it teaches us right from wrong. And when you lower those standards, when you take God out of the picture, I mean, you can understand everything that we see going on around us in this ecology, this spiritually polluted ecology that we find ourselves in. It is easier and easier to understand why things are going the way that they are when you simply take the Bible and you remove it as the standard, you take God out of the schools, you take God out of government, and what's left? Human standard. Human standard, which has already been proven to be at best perverted, but we do know that there's somebody behind this. There is somebody behind the scenes, and we've already talked about him just a little bit, who wants to do nothing more than to steal your crown and to take away the promises as Jesus Christ gave to us and as he revealed to us in John chapter 14, this thing called immortality. Friends, it just doesn't make sense. None of this that we see going on around us seems to make sense. From homosexual marriage to abortion, I can't think of anything that is more satanic than that of abortion, and yet we call it a right. And yet we want to do away with God. We want to throw away the Ten Commandments. We want to say they're done away with. And we read here in the book of Timothy, and I'm sure you've heard this before, this statement that says, all the world needs is love. Do you believe that? Well, I would suggest to you that people who say that don't know how right they are, that all the world does need is love and God's standard and his law. Now, as we close out, let me bring your attention to, once again, the items that we have to offer you completely free of charge. The full-length sermon CD delivered by Mr. Murray Palmateer in the Canadian Church, Indifference to Sin, and the booklet, What is Sin? Won't you call us at 888-578-8791? Again, that's 888-578-8791, or at cgi.org, and hit us up for any questions at info@cgi.org, and we'll see you again here next time, friends. So you keep on out of armor, and we'll be here right here next time.
Armor of God and the free material offered is brought to you by the Church of God International of Tyler, Texas. You may write to us at 3900 Thames Street, Tyler, Texas, 75701, or call toll-free at 1-888-578-8791, or call 1-903-939-2929 during regular business hours. You may visit our website at www.cgi.org or email us at armorofgodcgi.org. We appreciate your prayers and support.
This program is sponsored by the Church of God International and supported by our viewers.